And welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, November 19th, 2019. South Sudan's Assembly Speaker is threatened with a no-confidence vote.
For us to act as members of the SPLM, that sitting decided to tell the Speaker to resign. And indeed, that was what has been resolved unanimously.
And the leader of one South Sudanese party says this time the parties mean it when they say they'll work out their differences.
The security mechanisms that are in charge of implementing security arrangements are to sit down under the auspices of IGAD and map out the kind of activities that should be done in the 100 days and cost it.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some lawmakers from the ruling SPLM party are calling for the replacement of the Speaker of the Transitional National Legislative Assembly. The members of the SPLM caucus in the parliament have accused Anthony Lino Makana of allegedly misusing public funds, failing to table the Auditor General's report, and approving a government loan of some $400 million from the Africa Export-Import Bank without parliamentary approval. Viola Elias reports for VOA from Juba.
Lawmaker Samuel Dwideng says the lawmakers have notified SPLM leader and President Salva Kiir about their intent to pass a no-confidence vote on Assembly Speaker Makana. Lawmaker says at the meeting of the ruling SPLM party caucus yesterday, they asked Makana to resign, but Makana said he would only resign if asked to do so by SPLM leader President Kiir. Lawmaker Samuel Dwideng, a member of the SPLM caucus, says following the meeting, almost all the SPLM party members are expecting Makana to resign.
For us to act as members of the SPLM, that sitting decided to tell the Speaker to resign. And indeed, that was what has been resolved unanimously, that the Speaker and the Chief Whip of the SPLM, who did not perform his duties, have to resign. And as we speak now, the resolution has been compiled, and it is on the way now to the chairman of the party, where it will be now final after the endorsement by the chairman. So the speaker was asked by the sitting of 196 members of parliament of the SPLM purely to resign in front of that sitting.
Durai Mabiorteng, who represent Western Lakes State in the Transitional National Legislative Assembly, says Makana has failed to uphold transparency and accountability in parliament. Mabor says Makana has repeatedly declined to respond to questions about what he calls extensive cases of corruption involving the national parliament. Mabor says the lawmakers also accused their speaker of preventing ministers' summon to parliament to answer questions related to accountability.
I want to tell the people of South Sudan that Honorable Anthony Lino Makana, we gave him 72 hours to resign. Failure to do so and allow this motion to be tabled in the parliament will cast a vote of no confidence against him, and his immunity will be waived as an MP, and then he will proceed to the law. And we are asking the Auditor General to immediately step in to parliament for the parliament to be audited immediately, because we have realized that there are corruption cases within the parliament.
Mabor says MPs ask the Auditor General to audit the parliament because of alleged corruption within parliament. He also confirmed the speaker turned down an appeal from his party to resign.
This motion was pending because of the SPLM intervention, SPLM Parliamentary Caucus intervention. And now the speaker has failed to resign within the SPLM Parliamentary Caucus. We are still giving him another opportunity within 72 hours to resign.
Mabor insists the allegation levels against the speaker are all true. South Sudan in Focus could not independently verify all the allegations against Makana. Repeated calls to Makana for comment when unanswered. The acting Secretary General of the SPLM, Jemenu Nukumba, says he is not aware of what happened in the parliamentary caucus and will wait to receive a word from the Clerk of Parliament on what transpired in the parliament. This is the first time South Sudanese lawmakers are demanding the resignation of their speaker. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
The top U.S. diplomat on Africa says President Donald Trump's administration is seeking $4.9 billion for Africa operations, including a focus on security in the Sahel, fighting disease, and enhancing commerce. Tibor Nagy, the Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs at this hour, is testifying before the U.S. House of Representatives Subcommittee on Africa about the budget request for the 2020 fiscal year. He said the administration is committed to working with African states. He said no other nation can match the breadth or depth of America's engagement on the continent. Cheryl Anderson, the deputy assistant of the U.S. Agency for International Development for Africa, is testifying alongside Nagy. She said the U.S. effort is in part to help fight the Ebola outbreak in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. She said that the number of new infections is slowing, and she said that while health workers cannot say they have turned the corner on the outbreak, we, quote, can see the corner, end quote. She said the U.S. continues its Ebola vaccine program, patient tracing, and community engagement. She also said we have to look at the ring countries around the DRC, including Rwanda, Burundi, and South Sudan. The U.S. is working with them on identifying cases at border crossings. The leader of the National Democratic Movement, Lam McCall, says the South Sudanese parties that signed the revitalized peace agreement are serious in addressing the issues blocking the formation of a unity government. McCall says during the recent Addis Ababa meeting, the parties vowed they will finish the activities required for forming a unity government on time. He says this time the Kiir administration must honor its pledge to end the stalemates over security arrangements and the number of states and their boundaries.
The money must be available on the table. The government should not just be giving promises this time. There must be money on the table so that the mechanisms can start implementing what they are supposed to implement. This is one. Secondly, the security mechanisms that are in charge of implementing security arrangements are to sit down under auspices of IGAD and map out the kind of activities that should be done in the 100 days and costing. And I think now they started yesterday in Juba to work out what needs to be done in the 100 days.
The people in South Sudan who have endured this conflict for almost 5 years have been posing questions. And one question that I hear from people in Juba is, what is it that the parties will do within 100 days that they failed to do for the past 4 years or 5 years?
Well, that is a good question. Actually, it is not the last 5 years. It's the last 14 months. What was supposed to be done in 8 months and what was supposed to be done in the 6 month extension is now what is supposed to be done in 100. This is what you are asking, not the last 4 years. Well, as things go, it's true that in the 8 months, we did not reach the objective of forming unified armed forces. The same also when we did the extension for the 6 months. But what cannot be disputed is that within those periods, there were activities that were done. Although they fell short of reaching the final one, but there were activities. So there is a build-up of activities to the objective. And the objective is to form a unified army and also to decide on other issues.
Dr. Lam, talk to me from your military hat. I know you wear many hats. Talk to me from your military hat. Is it possible to train a unified army within these 100 days? And what are you training them on? These are people who have been fighting already. They know how to use AK-47. They know parade. They know command. They know everything. What are you training them on?
That is also a good question. It is because, you know, when we call it training, it is... what do we say? It is just borrowing. What we are doing is to bring them together and implant in them the spirit of working together. Because these are forces, as you said, that have been fighting each other for a long time. You know, in the army, what is important in the trust you have in your colleague. This period is basically a period of acquainting the soldiers with themselves and creating what we call in the military esprit du corps. That is the spirit of working together, the spirit of cooperation.
Within this regrouping and rearrangement and, you know, whatnot, are there any criteria to be followed in terms of what a unified soldier should look like?
Yeah, we have very rigorous conditions that must be applied in order to qualify, not only for the army, by the way, for all the six arm units. And that is why when we talk of cantonment, in cantonment you have many activities that take place. One of the activities is to register the forces, and then now is screen them. You screen them according to these criteria. Which one goes to the army, which one goes to the police, which one goes to wildlife, which one goes to the National Security Service, and so on. For example, in all of them, there is a question of age. There's an age limit to somebody to be in the army. And also there is an age limit to a particular rank. For example, you cannot be a major general when you are 30-something years. Also, the literacy requirement is more rigorous with the security service than the rest. At least you must have an ABC in order to qualify for all of them. So there are a number of criteria which I cannot remember off my head.
That is Lam McColl, leader of the opposition National Democratic Movement. He was speaking with my colleague John Tanza via WhatsApp from Khartoum earlier today. Officials say at least 5 people were killed and more than 20 others injured in renewed tribal fighting in Port Sudan, located in eastern Sudan's Red Sea state. Red Sea authorities have announced a curfew in the area to prevent further violence. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Khartoum.
Eyewitnesses in Port Sudan say the violence began last night when Alamin Daoud, a leader of opposition group United People's Front, and other party members planned to hold a public rally to brief locals on recent peace talks held in Juba with Sudanese officials. Port Sudan resident Abdurrahman Bakash says a group of local Hadandawa ethnic tribesmen, who are the majority in the area, protested against Dawood and his Beni Amir supporters holding a public rally in the town. Speaking in Arabic by phone from Port Sudan, he says the tension then escalated into a deadly violence.
The violence has turned from political to tribal. And as I speak, there is still confrontation between the two sides in some parts of the eastern Port Sudan town. And up to now, there are 5 dead that have been confirmed. So we are yet to know the estimated injured people. The situation is so bad.
Similar communal fighting broke out between the Beni Amir and Nuba tribes in September in the same town. More than 30 people have been killed in the incident. Bakash says all shopping centers are closed and people are staying indoors.
Mainly, the area which has been affected with this violence is the eastern part, and life here is totally crippled down. All business centers are closed down, and there are some which have been burned down from both sides. The fighting is still continuing.
Bakash says the death toll might arise as fighting continues. Bakash says the Red Sea State Acting Governor, Major General Hafiz Al-Taj Mekki, announced a curfew and banned all forms of public gatherings in the area until the further notice.
Yes, the authorities here have issued an order of curfew, and people are not allowed to move after 5 p.m. up to 5 a.m. And all forms of gatherings are not allowed, and another committee was also formed to pursue reconciliation between the two tribes.
A delegation from the central government in Khartoum, headed by a member of the Sovereign Council, Hassan Sheikh Idris, and the Minister of Interior and Information, are expected to arrive shortly to assess the situation in the ground. South Sudan in Focus reached out to the head of the United People's Front for comment on this story. His office manager says Dawood was busy to prepare a statement that is expected to be announced late this evening. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit, in Khartoum.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. Some South Sudanese who suffer from kidney disease say they cannot afford the cost of their treatment. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what skill would you most like to master?
I would love to learn how to use my hands. That is craft work, making the baskets and doing more of the clay artwork.
So I think I will go technology any day, anytime. So mastering what I do already, which is practically technology, which is software development, applications development, analysis and data mining.
I would love to play the organ. I love it. I love the sound. I would want to have it at home to play to my family.
Now many people don't like to be teachers. So for me, I'm willing to be.
I appreciate people that I can sing because I can't sing myself and I don't have a very good voice. So I will go for singing.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America, and it's time for our Tuesday Health segment. Today we are talking about the high cost of treating kidney disease in South Sudan. Patients suffering from kidney disease say they cannot afford treatment in a country where there are only two hospitals equipped with kidney dialysis machines. Patients at the private El Cardinal Kidney Hospital say they're paying up to $200 a week since they are responsible for buying medical supplies, including concentrated acid imported from Khartoum. Ding Magat has the story for VOA from Juba.
52-year-old Mary Andrua says she was diagnosed with chronic kidney disease, cancer, and anemia several years ago. She says she had one kidney surgically removed, and after the operation, doctors discovered her remaining kidney was not functioning properly. Andrua says in 2015 she went to India and received some treatment that made her feel better for a while. But last year, she began feeling sick and doctors soon discovered she had advanced kidney disease. She needed either a kidney transplant or dialysis, which involves removing excess waters and toxins from the blood in people whose kidney can no longer function naturally. Andrua says she went in for regular dialysis, but treatment in South Sudan is extremely expensive.
It's really very, very challenging to us, because we could not afford it. For the treatment of kidney is very, very costly. So as I, a non-working patient, and with some other people here, also patients who are not working, we could not afford the treatment.
James Duku says ever since his 72-year-old father, Isaac Kenyi, started dialysis in July, he has to pay $100 per week.
It's also the dialysis fees, that is $3,000. The heparin is 1,200 SSP. Then I need to buy the drips, that is 1,000. Then also I need to buy the gloves, I need to buy the syringe, I need to buy the multivitamins, I need to buy... Like now, my father is having infection also. I need to buy the antibiotics, the vancomycin, the gentamicin. So all these need money.
Dr. Abdallah Sabil, professor of medicine and kidney diseases at the Al Cardinal Kidney Hospital, visits regularly from Khartoum to treat patients and train staff in South Sudan. Sabil says dialysis involves a high-technology machine which is like a computer system fitted with power and has a constant supply of pure water treated with chemicals. A filter called a dialyzer is made to imitate the natural kidney of the human being and helps remove excess water and toxins from the body. Sabil admits dialysis is expensive. He advises South Sudanese communities to raise funds from charities to support patients with kidney diseases who cannot afford the cost of the treatment.
We have 5% or 10% of the patient whom can they afford, but the other 90% cannot afford. So, and the government cannot give all the money to kidney patients because the government has a responsibility to treat other patients also.
Dr. Maker Isaac, director of Juba Teaching Hospital, the country's only referral hospital, says many patients have died at his facility because they could not afford the cost of treatment.
It's very costly. If you don't have the money, unfortunately, you cannot go. You have to have money. So we have lost many patients because they are referred for kidney transplant and they don't have the means. So they just die. Unfortunately.
Dr. Isaac says Juba Teaching Hospital recently received 8 dialysis machines, a doctor and a nurse from Egypt to treat patients with kidney disease.
They came on Friday last week and they brought all the consumables. So the people who are not able to pay for dialysis in Cardinal, we can do them here for free. And the Egyptian will bring the staff for 6 months. After 6 months, the government will take over.
There are no statistics on how many South Sudanese suffer from kidney disease. Dr. Isaac says 15 patients are currently receiving treatment at the Al Cardinal Hospital. Al Cardinal Hospital belongs to Sudanese businessman who was recently sanctioned by the U.S. government for alleged corrupt deals in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
Under the theme, Leaving No One Behind, the World Health Organization is marking today's World Toilet Day by calling for policy reforms and measures to improve the work environment for sanitation workers. A new report shows that millions in the developing world are forced to work in conditions that endanger their health and lives and violate their dignity and human rights. Mavis Ocheri in Washington has more.
The reports on sanitation workers in 9 developing countries is jointly authored by WHO, the International Labour Organization, WaterAid, and the World Bank. It aims to raise awareness of the dehumanizing working conditions, the critical role that sanitation plays in reducing disease and creating healthier communities, and expanding sanitation access to the more than 4.2 billion people living without safely managed options. In Africa, the report focuses on Senegal, Kenya, Burkina Faso, and South Africa. Sanitation workers clean toilets, empty pits, and septic tanks, clean sewages and manholes, and operate pumping stations and treatment plants. WHO sanitation and water team leader Kate Medley-Cott says although sanitation workers provide an essential public service, they are often the poorest and most marginalized and discriminated against members of society. She says sanitation work is often informal, with workers getting no rights or social protections. Pay can be inconsistent or non-existent, as workers report being paid in food rather than money.
It's quite saddening and sickening in some cases just to see these circumstances, but it does vary. What we see is sanitation workers in very informal employment with very low pay, low job, low security, doing manual emptying in some cases with very little protective equipment and facing a whole range of health and well-being consequences from that. Worst cases, that would be death from inhalation of toxic fumes or pit collapses. They face injuries from sharp objects, microbial infections from exposure to excreta like that, in some cases drug and alcohol abuse to kind of deal with the disgusting nature of the work.
Medley-Cott says as various governments strive to achieve sustainable development goals, including access to adequate and equitable sanitation and hygiene for all, and an open defecation, emphasis must be placed on safely managed services where sanitation workers are on the front line.
We know that poor sanitation is responsible for over 400,000 deaths from diarrhea every year through transmission of diseases like cholera, dysentery, typhoid, and hepatitis A. And what we see in the data of countries' national targets for the SDGs, they're hugely ambitious, which is really encouraging. But it also challenges us to think about about the workforce that's going to be delivering these services, especially because in many countries we're seeing increased urbanisation, so those the need for sewage services or emptying of septic tanks and latrines. So those workers at all stages of the sanitation chain are really critical to achieving those goals.
Medley Court says the WHO would help strengthen national capacities, focusing on ensuring protections of sanitation workers are included in national policies and risk assessments and management at a local level. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Washington.
Some international airlines flying to Juba International Airport say they will likely stop flying to Juba because of repeated cases of customers' lost luggage. A South Sudan civil aviation official says he is not aware of the decision by the Ethiopian and Kenyan airlines to stop flying to South Sudan, but says he intends to hold meetings with executives of the airline companies to discuss the matter. Winnie Serino has the story for VOA from Juba.
Government spokesperson Michael McQuay told reporters after the Council of Ministers met last Friday, Ethiopian Airlines and Kenyan Airways want to stop routes to South Sudan because of rampant theft of customers' luggage at Juba International Airport. 31-year-old Kwach Pech says he lost a carton of books when he flew on Ethiopian Airlines from Entebbe to Juba last year. Pech says people frequently lose their belongings at Juba International Airport because of what he calls disorganization at the arrival terminal, where he says airport staff are hard to identify.
Sometimes you don't even know whether these are part of the airport authority or they are just some hawkers around or people who are just... Like sometimes they will come and try to take your luggage tag from you forcefully, and you really have to stand your ground, tell them, no, wait guys, I'm doing it myself, or maybe somebody else is doing it for you.
Pet says he reported the case to Ethiopian Airlines staff in Juba, and they tried to follow it up but did not recover the luggage. He says he suspects some officials hide luggage, and when the airlines follow up, then they present it. He says Juba Airport management should improve the security and ensure that no luggage is lost. He says Juba Airport management should improve security and ensure that no luggage is lost. He says airport authorities should also stop non-airport staff from accessing the terminals.
There is a need for officials to have a specific kind of uniforms and the IDs always on display so that you will be able to know who is an official so that you can trust and who is not. So with that, when something gets lost, it will easily be traced because the airport authority will know who are on duty that day. And if something gets lost, those people will be accountable to why things get lost. So it will be easy.
Korkwal, managing director of Juba International Airport, says he had such allegations from a staff member and has taken action.
I give order to one of my secretary so that to write a circular to all international flights so that I met them, so that I heard their complaints. Whether the issue will come up or not come up, this one. Number two also, we are approaching to the end of the year. And always end of the year, there are a lot of problems that can occur and all that. So that we prepare our order before that time came.
Pech says threats by Ethiopian and Kenyan Airlines to stop routing to South Sudan will affect several people because prices will shoot up. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
That is our show for this Tuesday. We leave you with a taste of the peace song by Issaka No. 1. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. We're glad you could be here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Ashaniyan bikore aga tomon binagis nsoan bikore ruja tomon bikalaso abo hat bikore iya tomon biwodoro jidoza tu bikore gelba to biwaja.
Number 1 on the beat.
shuno, mina lisa vishakilo badontana.